When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I am your host, Andy Metz. Today, we are previewing Senior Day for the Kansas Jayhawks. Yes, that means that the Kansas State Wildcats are coming to town, which, of course, means only one thing. I've been told that these are some of the best episodes that this podcast has when our guest today comes on because... of the back and forth. It is Scott McFarland, a.k.a. Scott Wildcat on Twitter. He is the host of the Bosco's Boy podcast right here on the 1012 Podcast Network. Scott, how you doing today?
Doing well. Always fun to come on any of the 1012 shows. And yes, I think that there is a slight, perversion that folks enjoy when we're on the mic together because we do give each other a little bit of back and forth. And I always enjoy it. And I like to say this anytime I go on any 1012 podcast, that I'm just really proud to be part of this network. I really think that everything that Philip did, and you've been his right-hand man, I think maybe since the start. So, always enjoy going on these shows, and I'm really proud to be part of the network that is for the fans, by the fans, covering, these Big 12 schools and the conference all together. So, I always like to throw that in there when I go on one of my fellow 1012 network shows.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. I mean, Philip and I both were trying to find a network for our respective podcasts and decided that we would just make one. So we launched it. Oh, gosh, it's been now 3 years almost, or maybe more than 3 years. I don't know. It's been a while. Going strong. And, of course, looking now, we're going to have to add more podcasts because there's now more Big 12 teams. So, all right, let's go ahead and dive in here because I feel like there's a lot to talk about, but there's not a lot of time to do it. So looking at this Kansas State team, first of all, obviously, defending Big 12 champions, come back this year with most of that same group coming back. And at this point, I mean, they are 7-3 on the year. That would be 5-2 in conference. Sorry. I, for some reason, did not have that number pulled up.
Yep. 5-2 yeah. In conference, 7-3 overall.
Yeah. I mean, is this where Kansas State fans expected to be?
Well, so first I'll take a little bit of, I'll say bringing everything back is a little misleading when you have four draft picks. You lost your number one and number three wide receiver as well. I think K-State did lose a little bit more than
that's
you're
fair.
Kind of saying.
It's weird. It's weird
because that was the knock. That was the knock on K-State. Oh, you're losing all this production, in your secondary and getting your sacks and all those yards with Deuce, Malik, Cade, and for better or worse, whether K-State fans want to remember it or not, Adrian Martinez ended up with a ton of yards through the air and rushing and touchdowns himself. So
yeah, that's
again,
fair.
I think we lost a little bit more production than you're. Than
I think
you're
I was confusing.
On.
I think I was mixing up some of the intros. Texas Tech, I know for sure. And like last time they didn't lose very much at all. I also think though, kind of some of that is that people, don't quite recognize how much you guys lost because parts have been so seemingly interchangeable from year to year.
And I think
especially
that's
on
fair,
defense.
And I think that's a testament to what Chris Kleiman's been able to do, because again, you have one corner starting for the Indianapolis Colts, one who is on the practice squad with the Chiefs. You have two safeties that are on practice squad. Actually, Josh Hayes was a seventh round draft pick. He's on the Buccaneers. You lose Felix Anudike Uzomah, first round draft pick to the Chiefs. Eli Huggins was looking like he was going to be an undrafted free agent before he hurt himself at Pro Day. And then even just this year, K-State's experienced three season-ending injuries at linebacker as well. So even on the defense, I think it's more of a testament to what Chris Kleiman's been able to do in the last, 5 years now, and what he's been able to build, that folks are able to be like, oh, it's just, you know, in and out, you know, some handful of back-end draft guys and some, you know, Big 12, you know, all-conference contenders. So I do think that is a credit to what he's been able to do in his time at K-State.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, now that we've firmly established that I don't know as much about this team as I thought I might, let's go ahead and dive in, because, you know, I do think it's fair to say that the team has taken a step back from where people, I think, were expecting, especially with the hot start that they had to begin the year. You know, DJ Giddens having the gigantic game against UCF. You know, he's at basically 860 yards on the season at this point. I think part of that might just be kind of getting overshadowed by some of the other guys. I'm thinking, you know, specifically Ollie Gordon, you know, a few of the other fantastic running backs we have here in the Big 12. But it feels like this team is underachieved. But when I go and I look at stuff, I don't know that that's actually true.
Yeah, I think when K-State fans were diagnosing the season, I think the big outlier, and your fans are going to hate to hear this, but I don't think anyone expected Missouri to be this good. That's
really, I agree. Nobody expected that.
That's the difference. I think almost every K-State fan in the world had K-State sitting at 7-2 coming into the season. Not me, or at this point in the
Eight and two at this point.
Five and two. Right, because there's two more to play. Seven, we're through seven in the Big 12.
Right.
It's been a long season.
I see what you're talking about. I'm okay, right, yeah, there. Yeah. Right. So in the Big 12, yes, you're expecting them to be 5-2. But yes, I think overall, I think the expectation at this point, though, was that it was going to be eight and two with two losses in the Big 12 at this point.
Correct. Yes.
And the potential
and undefeated
to finish
in the non-con. Yeah. So I don't think K-State fans expected Missouri to be any good. I think we kind of flip-flopped what the expectation was with Texas Tech and Oklahoma State. So every single – for the first two losses, the Missouri loss and the Oklahoma State loss, in the moment felt like the end of the world. Missouri turns out to be a top 15 team. Oklahoma State figures it out and just becomes kind of like a Gundy team. You know, that loss at UCF kind of took a little bit of wind out of their sails, but they're a top 25 team, maybe a top 20 team. So when you do that and go to Texas on the road, it's rough. So has K-State underachieved versus preseason expectations, maybe by a game? But when you kind of take a step back, you're like, man, you know, you would have liked to have a player or two back. You know, you do this, you do that, all of a sudden, maybe you only have one loss. Maybe you're undefeated, because every single one of those games were one possession games, including overtime game and a 63-yard field goal, a record-breaking field goal in the SEC, plus what we know what happened in Oklahoma State. So, yes, maybe underachieving a little bit, but I think when you take a step back, it's like, all right, you know, Dr. Pepper contenders, Arlington contenders, top 20 type team. I don't think too many K-State fans are down in the dumps where we are right now.
Well, and especially when you consider just how crazy the Big 12 is at this point. I mean, you have seven teams.
It took a while to get there, by the way. Like, yeah, everyone's saying, hey, this is going to be a nutty season for the entire conference. But like, what, the first five games are all kind of looking around like, okay,
like,
what's
crap
going on?
Who's going to stop Texas and Oklahoma?
Yeah, and it finally kind of came up. Now, it might still be Texas and Oklahoma when it's all said and done, but it at least kind of lived up to that preseason billing of this is going to be a wild year in the Big 12.
Yeah, but, I mean, you've got seven different teams, maybe eight. No, I think it's only seven, that have a potential of still getting to Arlington at this point. You have some wacky tiebreakers that have to happen for teams like Kansas to make it. But they still actually have a path. Like, it requires, I was just looking at this. It's not as weird as I thought it was going to be. Oklahoma has to lose to either BYU or TCU. Kansas has to beat Kansas State. Kansas State has to beat Iowa State. Iowa State has to beat Texas. But if all that happens, and Oklahoma State has to lose one more to somebody, all that happens, and somehow Kansas gets the number two seed against Texas, and it's just extremely weird how that's even possible at this point. Like, I thought I was going to have to go, like, you know, neck deep into tons of tiebreakers and all this stuff to make it happen. But that just tells you, I think, how crazy this Big 12 season has been. At this point, you still have legitimately seven teams fighting for a conference champion spot.
I would say that, that you did have to get neck deep to get there. If I was wanting to, needle you a little bit,
let me put it that, like, yes, Kansas State's a favorite for this weekend, but it's not outside the realm of possibility to think that KU could win that game.
Football's football.
Yeah. 100%. Iowa State is an underdog against Texas, but the way Texas has been playing and letting teams come back, like, I could easily see Iowa State winning that game if they needed to. You know, the biggest question mark, really, I think, for me becomes, is BYU able to beat either, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, or does Oklahoma, lay an egg against TCU at the end of the year? But either way, like, all of those things, like, you look at each of them individually, they don't seem that strange in the context of this season. Now, all of them together, you probably don't have all of those happen, but I think we've seen stranger stuff happen this year already.
I don't know. Would anything be? I mean, what would be stranger than BYU getting Oklahoma or Oklahoma State on the road?
Well, they play Oklahoma State at home, so I think BYU.
Oh, so both of those are at home?
No. BYU travels to Oklahoma this week, but then
I don't know. Yeah,
They're on the road at Oklahoma this week, and then they host Oklahoma State next week. Next week, Oklahoma goes to TCU to end the season. If Houston can go on the road and beat West Virginia on a ridiculous Hail Mary, like, I think that's the weirdest thing that we've seen.
No, BYU's at home, by the way.
Against
Oklahoma. You have that reversed.
Have that wrong. Okay. For some reason, I thought it was the other way around.
Yeah,
anyway.
No, you're fine. And yes, I guess in theory, I don't know. I think BYU beating Oklahoma or going to Stillwater, I think that would be the craziest result. Especially because of what's on the line, but you're not wrong. Like, it isn't like any one of those individual games is, University of, Maryland, Bay County or whatever versus, Virginia. What was that? Yeah. The first six.
UMBC. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. UMBC. Yeah, that was awesome. Maryland, Baltimore County. Yes. I agree. It was very awesome. Yes, none of those are 16 versus one, but I think.
I am in no way counting on Kansas going to Arlington this year. Like, if it happens, I'm going to celebrate.
You're correct.
Two
games in the season, so many teams can go. Your original point, and I just had to do my thing where I needle you. Your original point is correct. Yes, the Big 12 lived up to the billing of this being a wild season.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, talk about wild season. I think coming into the year, I think everyone expected Will Howard to be the guy the entire year. There was a stretch of the year where it seemed like Avery Johnson. Like, maybe they were going to be better served going with Avery Johnson, and it looked like maybe they were going to switch, and then they switched back to Will Howard. What has been going on at the quarterback position? What, like, led to that kind of turnaround and then reversal? And, like, how did we get where we are right now?
Yeah, for sure. So, Avery Johnson, one of the top quarterback recruits from the state of Kansas. So, obviously, he's going to be a beloved figure by K-State fans. Will Howard comes into the season and really – everyone last year, they wanted Will Howard to come in, and the reason they wanted him over Adrian Martinez is because he was forcing the issue. He was taking some risk. He was, making a throw that, hey, by the book, maybe you shouldn't, but it turns into a big play because Ben Sennett grabs her, Cade Warner grabs it, Malik Knowles grabs it. And we saw it multiple times in the Big 12 championship where, hey, he made a throw, he put it through the eye of a needle, and it was a big play. He came in with that same mentality this year, maybe turned up a couple notches, and he was turning the ball over, at least once a game. There was a little bit of rumblings. Of course, anytime you lose a game, fans are going to try to find something. I defended him after the Missouri game. I thought he played fine, but the issue was, is we saw our first taste of Avery Johnson with the first team offensive line, and he was picking up 8-9 yards a carry. So everyone's like, ooh, could this be the one? And then the rumors of him being hurt begin. You have that UCF game where you're running all over them, you know, and then you have your bye week and you're thinking, all right, you know, go down to Stillwater, a place where we haven't won in, you know, what, once in the last, you know, two decades, it seems like. It's probably not that bad, but it's pretty bad. We don't win in Stillwater. And then he has a 3-4 interception game. He looked horrible. It was the single worst game a K-State quarterback has played maybe in the history of K-State football post-Snyder, you know, because I'm sure there was some trash back in the 70s.
Or even post, like, mid-Snyder.
Yeah, well, I mean, even then, I don't know how many three, four interception games these guys are having. But, you know, you do have the comeback. You're like, oh, man, you know, that kind of sucked. What's going on here? And then you go down to Texas Tech. And the offense was stalling out a little bit. And they were kind of switching things up. And Avery goes on to have five rushing touchdowns in one game. Ties a record with Colin Klein. The offensive coordinator, everyone thinks, all right, this is the changing of the guard. Here we go. It's Avery's team. And they proceed to switch back and forth every single series in the TCU game. And I think Will Howard was maybe slightly better, but Avery Johnson was still pretty damn good versus TCU. And then after that, you know, you have the Texas game, you have it was the Houston game. I believe it was Houston where Will is absolutely cooking. And, Avery's very first snap, he fumbles the ball and they decide, all right, we're not going to mess around with it. We're just going to let Will cook. So it really turns out, to be, yes, it was the Houston game. So then they just said, all right, we're rolling with Will. We're going to give Avery some snaps. But really, I think it comes down to it was a shot to the system of Will Howard. He comes like, okay, you know, I can't be messing around. They have a guy they're willing to go with. And honestly, since the Oklahoma State game, even if you include the Texas Tech game, he's only turned the ball over once. He's throwing the ball just like he did at the back end of last year. And K-State's offense, again, has taken off. With Will Howard being able to chuck the ball all around the field, he's distributing it now to, you know, a bunch of guys each game. You know, there are a few games early in the season where there's like maybe one wide receiver caught a pass and then a couple tight ends and a couple running backs. And now you're seeing 9-10 guys catching passes in the game. So I don't know what it is. I don't know if it really was just like a wake up call to Will. I don't know if he is someone who just works better when he's under pressure. Keep in mind, this is the only year he's ever been the starting quarterback coming out of camp. It's the only year he's ever been the preferred starting quarterback by the staff. So maybe he just feels, you know, at home, having the job up in the air. I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, I'm glad it happened because, again, he's turned into that guy that we all hoped he would. The sad part about it was it took 6 games to get him there.
Yeah, I mean, it is unfortunate it took so long because I know I had high expectations. You know, I surprised you early in the year when I was talking about how good I thought K-State was going to be. And, you know, so I guess maybe that ties into why I think they might have underachieved a little bit because I expected them to be a lot better just because of the way that the Big 12 was. But I do think that the offense has hit its stride. It finally knows what it's doing. It still seems to be a little bit inconsistent here and there. And I do think there is still a legitimate argument to be made about how, or I should say a discussion to be had about how, you know, good this actual turnaround has been considering the level of opponents that they've had it against. And I understand, you know, the game against Texas where you had a huge comeback in the second half, but a lot of that I think was turnover driven. A lot of that I think was just, you know, when you only have to go 20 or so yards in order to get a touchdown, it's a lot easier to get a touchdown than it is when you have to drive the entire field. I'm not saying that I think that they aren't, you know, a much improved offense from the beginning of the year or, you know, but I do think it's at least reasonable to wonder, you know, did you look so good because you played a Texas Tech defense that was struggling, a TCU defense that is abysmal this year, and a Houston defense that really can't do anything, you know, every other week. And then of course, Baylor last week, like I don't think it's completely fair to write off any of that. Like, yes, you still have to play really well against the bad teams and to show that you how good you are. But I think if you're looking for a reason as a Kansas fan to be optimistic, I don't think it's completely unfair to say, yeah, but look who they had this offensive resurgence against. I mean, what else about this offense has changed in the last few weeks that you think really kind of shows that this is a forward moving trend as opposed to a where we took advantage of some really bad defenses?
Well, my reply is we've only had one bad offensive game the entire year. So I get what you're trying to say. And it really is the Oklahoma State game. And if you want to throw out, the positive for K-State's offense, versus Texas because of turnovers. But you're not going to give the same kind of benefit as, turnovers, that's the only thing that stopped K-State's offense versus Oklahoma State. So, again, I take a little bit of, objection, with that, because if you go back and even when Will's struggling, we're still putting up numbers that, Troy has. I know Troy, but again, did stuff to them that no one else has. If you look at what we were able to do versus Missouri, again, you stall out a little late due to a quarterback injury and you keep them out there. Again, you did that versus one of the best defensive fronts in all of college football. Say what you want about Texas. Again, you still put up a big number and they weren't stopping you. The only thing that stopped K-State on that game in the second half was K-State. And part of it was a long throw to open up the second half. It was about to be a 50-yard gain. Keegan Johnson's going down with it, bobbles the ball. It pops straight up to a Texas defender. So, I take a little bit of objection with it. If I was going to be put in your shoes, if I was trying to find positives for KU's defense versus K-State's offense, I would say, hey, look, KU's defense is one of the best in intercepting guys. If you look at how KU's boundary corners play, they're trying to bait you into doing something quick to the boundaries and then jump that ball. And again, you and I had a friendly little back and forth about, turnovers and defensive touchdowns and all that type of stuff. You don't take those off the scoreboard. There's an element of luck to turnovers and there's a higher element of luck for defensive touchdowns. But at the end of the day, that's how KU schemes things up on defense. They're trying to bait you to do something quick to the outside and they're going to jump it. So I wouldn't say, K-State, they turned it around. No, K-State has, three quarters of bad offense versus Oklahoma State and two bad quarters of offense versus Texas. So I would say those are the far bigger outliers than anything else. And that isn't where you should look for confidence and hope for KU's defense. It's Will Howard earlier in the season was a turnover machine, and KU's scheme is specifically set up for your boundary guys to make big plays.
Yeah, I mean, I do think in kind of getting into the matchup here, that is what I was going to kind of point to, is that I think part of Will Howard, yes, he's making better decisions with the ball, but he's also been playing against teams that don't really create turnover opportunities very much. And so I do think that there's a little bit of, or I should say, it's not all one or the other. It's not all that he's been playing a lot better and taking better care of the ball, or all that, everybody has not been as good at getting turnovers in terms of who he's been playing. But I do think that there's a little bit of each that Kansas could potentially take advantage of. And just to be clear, I wasn't trying to completely invalidate that they were able to punch it in. I do think that a turnover that you get that sets your offense up is a much big positive for your defense and evaluating your defense than it is for evaluating your offense. Because most teams, if they're at the 20, are probably going to score, are probably going to get a touchdown.
And K-State does have the number one touchdown rate red zone defense yeah. and offense in the Big 12. So, again, I
will say Oklahoma had the exact same thing when they came to Lawrence and Kansas was able to turn that around. So,
okay, but you're kind of cherry picking one game because if you want to look into things, KU's what, middle of the pack for touchdown rate?
No. All zone? I'm saying is that when Oklahoma came in, that was the one thing that the guy I had on, Peyton Guthrie from through the Keyhole Pod came on, and that was the one thing he pointed to why he was so optimistic, was because Oklahoma had the number one red zone offense, number one red zone defense, and in terms of touchdown conversion rates as well, they had that at the same time. And so he was super confident that, as long as Kansas didn't get a bunch of big, long scores, that they were going to be okay. And Kansas was able to punch it in from the red zone quite a few times in that game. So again, I'm not saying that it absolutely means anything. It was just more of a comment of, it's great to have that on your side. It's great to be able to point to that trend. But as we've seen in the Big 12 this year, that doesn't necessarily mean anything in terms of, you know, how the game is actually going to go. Obviously, small sample size, just a single game, you know, wonky, weird stuff happens. But Kansas at home has been a completely different animal, especially on defense, than they have been on the road. And I think part of the problem of trying to evaluate this Kansas team on both offense and defense is that they play so much differently on the road. Like, you look at their home-road splits, they're really, really bad, like really different. And so I do think that this is a situation where you can't necessarily look at what Kansas does on average, because they're much better at home than they are on the road. And, you know, they're going to be at home this week, so we'll have to see how that plays out. But like you said, I do think that it's set up for Kansas to have a good game. The question is going to be, can they execute, and can they force Will Howard into some bad situations, or can they, you know, pop the ball out if DJ Giddens is running it? Can they find some way to create extra possessions for them?
Yeah, I just want to say, I don't sign on to it. It sets up well for KU. that is Andy Mitz saying that. I understand that you don't
think it sets up well for KU, but I think we've had that same opinion every single year in terms of who it sets up well for. And, you know, I'm not going to raise the argument up again, but, you know, I will just point out that there was some wonkiness happening in the game last year. I think there's a really good opportunity for wonkiness to happen this year. The question is it going to be Kansas with a freak fumble early in the game that sets K-State up, or is Kansas going to get a really good bounce that's going to help them? So, but regardless, last thing I'll ask on this offense, because I know that normally K-State is really good on both lines, offense and defensive line. My impression this year has been that the offensive line has not been as good as it usually is, and that it still has a ways to go. They have good individual pieces, but as a cohesive offensive line, I don't think that they've quite come together the way that I would have expected based off of what they had returning. Is that a fair assessment, or am I missing something?
I mean, it was a fair assessment in September, maybe October, but they're one of the eight finalists for the Joe Moore Award, or I think I have that right, for the best offensive line unit in the country. They have been absolutely mauling ever since we came home from that Oklahoma State game. So I think that was very true early on. I think there was a level of frustration with K-State fans early on, and I think Connor Riley is one of the best offensive line coaches in the country. But there has to be something about how he goes about fall camp, and I think what it is K-State rotates too much early on in the season. And it prevents them from settling into that group of five, because that's where, you know, the unit more than any other thing in all of college sports matters the most. It's the offensive line and the chemistry you have there. You know, you started off with injuries. You had Cooper Beebe playing all five positions at different points this season. And once you are able to get everyone healthy, once you're able to settle in on who your five is, and then cut the rotation from 12 in one game down to seven, because I believe it might not have been 12. I think it might have been 11 versus Missouri, played 11 offensive linemen versus Missouri. Now in non-garbage time, it's down to seven guys, and the rotation is all on the right side. I think they've found their groove. So, again, I think that was 100% accurate. I'm not going to say that, oh, you know, you're just making that up out of thin air. No, it was accurate in September and early October. But ever since that Oklahoma State game, this offensive line has been everything we thought it was going
to
be.
Yeah, I will say, I tried to stay as up-to-date with most of the teams as possible. It was impossible to stay up-to-date with all of the teams. And unfortunately, like, the last few games I've had personal stuff or KU-related stuff happening the same time as the game, so I haven't been able to watch them as closely as I would like. So it sounds like my information was a little bit outdated. However, the one thing that is not outdated is the fantastic collection of sports apparel over at our partner here, the Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. Charlie Hustle is a vintage-inspired clothing company that's based right here in Kansas City, and they want you to be the best-dressed fan this season. You can shop from more than 30 different schools that they have, They have vintage collegiate apparel, officially licensed. It's absolutely great stuff. And of course, the Kansas and Kansas State Lions are absolutely the best. Look, the beef shirt that they have for Kansas State. I'm not a Kansas State guy. I don't usually like to get a bunch of Kansas State stuff, but that is a shirt that I have had on my list because I absolutely love it. I was an offensive lineman when I played football in junior high and high school. And so, you know, I have a nice affinity for offensive line and defensive line people. And so I love that shirt. I really want that shirt. You can get it as well by going over to charliehustle.com using promo code 101215. That's TEN1215 to get 15% off of all non-sale items. Again, charliehustle.com, promo code 101215 to get 15% off of all of those non-sale items. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. All right, I do want to jump over, talk a little bit about the defense and the matchup and the game and all that stuff. But before we do that, I need to throw to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And we're back. I am here with Scott McFarland, a.k.a. Scott Wildcat, over on Twitter. We are talking, of course, about Kansas State, since, you know, he does host the Bosco's Boys, which is the Kansas State show here on the network. Just got done talking about offense. Let's flip over to the defense, because you talked about all the defensive players that they lost, you know, in terms of the draft and kind of that perception that, you know, they're just able to kind of plug and play because they've had a good defense forever. Linebackers have usually been kind of the position you look at that Kansas State is just really, really good at. But I don't know that that's necessarily the case this year. I think it's kind of more spread out across the entire defense. Who are the main standout guys on this defense? Who should you expect as a Kansas fan to hear their name called quite a bit because they're making a bunch of plays?
So I will say Jake Clifton, who is one of the better linebackers we had. He started off hurt. He came back. He'd been on fire. He did have a season-ending injury last week. So I was going to, you know, wax poetically about Jake Clifton. But instead, I am going to talk about a linebacker from Topeka, Kansas, Desmond Purnell. He's been playing at an all Big 12 level this year. He's starting this year. Again, Khalid Duke was in the position that Desmond Purnell is playing this year. Khalid Duke is now playing defensive end, his native position. But he's been a madman. He started off as a walk-on safety, a blue shirt safety or gray shirt safety, whatever. All those
whatever
weird
that
scholarship
yeah.
rules before COVID got rid of like the initial counter stuff. But he came on, he was a scholarship guy, but everyone thought, okay, this is going to be a you know, a long-term project. He started making some plays last year and was more of a special teams guy and spelled. But over the last 4 or 5 weeks, he's been a man on a mission, playing with his hair on fire. Whatever cliche you want to use, he has it. He has been a menace, and I think he's going to have a big game. And then again, the other linebacker, and I think he's been you know, kind of in the shadows a little bit more because, again, you've had a few guys – really step up at the Mike linebacker. You've had Desmond Purnell at the Sam linebacker, but the Will backer, Austin Moore, who came on big time last year, he's quietly just been had just another solid season. He cleans everything up. And the thing that the K-State linebackers have going for them, they are very good at finding their run fits. They are very good at covering ground and using leverage and knowing where they are on the field to prevent something crazy happening on a routine run. The one worry at linebacker, Austin Romaine, a true freshman, is probably going to start. He had a couple starts earlier in the season after Daniel Green was lost for the season in that Missouri game. He's the one, and you don't love it because it's in the middle of the field. He's the one who, one play a game, he has a big miss. And if KU, if Devin Neal can hit a home run on that, you know, there's a chance it's going to be 20, 25, 30, maybe 6 points. There's a little worried there, but he is assignment sound. He is athletic. And then Rex Van Wy, who is a junior college guy who now is playing, they were saving his red shirt because he was banged up a little bit in the spring, was kind of learning everything in the fall. And he was third or fourth on the depth chart at that mic. Well, you know, the reins are off him now that he's going to be able to keep his red shirt. And he looked very good last week. So we'll see what's going on there. Defensive ends, you don't have Khalid Duke. You don't have a future first-round draft pick. But you do have four guys who have had multi-sack games either this year or at the back end of last year. Cody Stufflebean, a Kansas kid from McPherson, Kansas. He had two sacks last game. Brendan Mott from Iowa, he had two sacks in a game earlier this season. A handful of forced fumbles. Nate Matlack from Olathe, he's had multi-sack games. He's been in there quite a bit. And then Khalid Duke from Atlanta, Georgia, he's been the leading sack getter. I don't know if he's still holding on to that honor, but at one point he was the leading sack guy for K-State. I think he's around six or seven, and he's been around for a while. So really that front part of the defense you're going to hear a lot about. Secondary, you have Keenan Garber from Lawrence, Kansas. Again, he's only been playing cornerback for a year. Like a year ago last week, he started playing cornerback because he'd been a wide receiver. He had a pick six last week. Will Lee, the top corner in junior college from Iowa Western, he's going to be starting on the other side. And then Jacob Parrish, another Olathe kid. I think he'll probably start in front of Keenan Garber, but he also has the ability to play inside as well. And then safeties, that was the biggest issue in the first three games for the defense. They moved Kobe Savage from free to Jack safety. Marquise Siegel's a strong safety. And they're playing VJ Payne, who's a true sophomore, back at that spot where he backfilled Kobe Savage at the back end of last year. So that's the starting lineup. And all of those guys are capable of having big games. But I think you're going to hear Desmond Purnell and Austin Moore heard over the PA system quite a bit on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because the way you talk about this Kansas State defense is the way that I typically talk about the Kansas defense, and that there's so many different guys that can have a big game. The real question is who's going to have a big game, and are they all going to be able to have decent games at the same time? And that's really, I think, where we're sitting with a lot of it. Like, you know, Kansas does not have a high quality, you know, potential draft pick in terms of a pass rusher, but they do have a collection of four or five guys that have all gotten multiple sacks on the year. By the way, Duke is still the leading sack getter on the year. Matlack is one behind at four, whereas Duke has five. But I mean, you know, Kansas has a lot of guys that are similar to that as well. And so it sounds extremely familiar in that there are a lot of guys that are extremely capable. It's a matter of who's going to be able to step up. For Kansas, I think it's the cornerbacks. It sounds to me like for you guys, it's probably actually going to be the safeties, because that's where Kansas is going to try to throw the ball, is going to be in the middle of the field, you know, kind of right behind the linebackers, right in front of the safeties. And I think that's where Kansas is the most comfortable in the passing game. But I think the biggest thing, if you're looking at this K-State defense, how much, I don't know if worry is the right word, but how much is there in terms of, you know, this team being able to handle so many different things that a offense could do at any time? Because Kansas, I think, is one of the few offenses that you give them, like, they give you a look, and they could be doing probably seven or eight different plays out of that look that are all completely different. And so you have to prepare for those or guess which one it is. How well has Kansas been able to handle a team that can do those sorts of things?
I mean, you know, look, they're what? K-State's 25th in defensive success rate, 8th in net points per drive, 13 on defense. So, again, I think they are a top 25 level defense. The thing that worries me is what you said. KU's going to do a lot of eye candy. They want to have your eyes going all over the place. And like you said, Andy Kotelecki, I think I said it somewhat right. You don't have to correct me. Ballpark.
It's that was perfect.
I think K-State fans are at least the ones who like care about college football, who watch college football, who dive into college football. I think there's a ton of respect for him. I think he is one of the best offensive coordinators in the country. I truly believe him and Colin Klein might be the two best in the Big 12. I might be biased, but I do think if they're not one and two, we can debate who's one, who's two. You know, they're definitely in the top four in the conference. I think they're both in the top 25 in the conference. I think both guys are going to be getting calls from, you know, lower tier Power Five and any FCS job, any upper tier FCS head coaching job. I think both those guys are future head coaches. So there's a ton of respect. With having Austin Romaine, a true freshman who has never played versus KU, has never played versus one of these offenses, or at least the KU version of it, it gives me a little bit of worry. Luckily, Austin Moore has played versus this offense twice already. He's going to be able to take on the communication. He's going to play every play. So it won't be the historic, you know, Mike linebacker, you know, in the NFL. It's the green dot. The green dot's always playing in the middle. Well, Austin Moore is going to be calling the defense. He'll be shouting everything out. And then again, you have Kobe Savage, who's going to be lined up behind him in that jack safety role. So he's going to make sure that Austin Romaine's in the correct spot. And again, you might see a little bit of Bill Palmer. You might see a little bit of Rex Van Wy. So that is my biggest worry. Luckily, I don't know if it's luckily or not. Luckily, that's just one spot that I'm worried about. I have a lot of confidence on the boundary guys. I have a lot of confidence with the safeties. And again, I have a lot of confidence in our three down linemen as well. But at the end of the day, when you're going up against an offense that's capable of putting up points against anyone, there is an element of anything can happen. I'm confident in the K-State defense. I think that we have, again, you can say whatever you want about some of these teams, but when K-State played them, Texas Tech had, you know, a top 30 offense in the country. When K-State played Houston, you know, if you look at what they do, again, you know, you can find a stat for anything. But again, some of their offensive success rate, especially passing before that K-State game, they were a salty team. TCU has put up points. I think they've quit. I think they've kind of mailed it in.
Yeah.
But I don't think they've played a bunch of nobodies. And again, I think the big play over the top is what's hurt K-State the most. I don't know if KU is capable. I don't want to say capable. I don't think that's their MO. I don't think their bread and butter is saying, hey, we have guys and we're going to beat you. I think where they're at their best is when they are able to sneak out, you know, a tight end and everyone forgot where he was and boom, that's a 50-yard play. Or hey, you know, they're running a crossing pattern or they're doing something in motion and your cornerback's completely lost and boom, there's a touchdown. So I'm hoping the communication's good. I'm hoping that they're on their P's and Q's, because if they're not, I'm going to have a lot of KU fans finding old tweets of mine. So
what I will say is, you should ask Iowa State fans about Kansas' ability to go over the top, or Oklahoma State fans as well. Cause Kansas did that to both of them. They just went over the top over and over again. In fact, Jason Bean had 5 touchdown passes of 30 yards or more because he kept going over the top on Oklahoma State. I don't know. I think what really you look at, though, is, and this is what Andy Kotelecki is so good at, is adjusting to what he's seeing on the field. I don't think that there is an offensive coordinator that is better at completely changing the game plan based off of what they've seen on the field, because he has, now, granted, he has so many options, and they have drilled so much stuff, and they've been so consistent and had the same continuity of players and coaches for so long, that you have a much bigger playbook, I think, that you can draw from than most teams, because they have had basically 3 years at this point to install everything. And so I do think that that's an advantage only because of institutional consistency that you can't necessarily have when you don't have the same players playing for 3 years straight you know, in the same system with all the same coaches. And so, you know, I think this year's a little bit different than past years because we've seen games where Kansas, you know, pounds it on the ground and finds holes and, you know, goes really slow and methodical. They did that against UCF quite a bit, you know, even though UCF kind of gave them a ton of big plays as well. But, you know, the game plan was to be on the ground and go as slow as possible and, you know, use the legs that you had to kind of run that timeout and everything. Whereas Oklahoma State, they just bombed the crap out of that team. They did the exact same thing to Iowa State. Like Iowa State, they set up big, long plays. There was Lawrence Arnold was talking about how, you know, he was looking at the tendency of the Iowa State safety to crash down to help protect against the run. And he did that four or five times on a play where, you know, Arnold was crossing over the middle. I mean, he wasn't deep enough for it, you know, for them to throw it over the top, and there wasn't enough time to do it. But they saw that, they communicated that, and then immediately after Iowa State got really close, it's like, okay, we're going to run that play, and Arnold goes deep, the safety bites, goes up towards the run, you know, goes up to try to protect against the run, and, you know, it's an 80-yard touchdown. So I do think that Kansas has that capability. The real question is enough stuff going to show up during the game for them to switch to that? Is it going to be a huge part of their game plan, or are they going to find success elsewhere? I think the biggest question for me on whether Kansas' offense is successful is how willing are they to make quick changes to how they're going to do things? Are they going to be super stubborn, you know, and run, you know, up the gut for first and second down for the entire first half like they did against Texas Tech before opening things up? Or are they actually going to make those changes? I'm not really sure which one we're going to see, but I'm hoping it's going to be a good game and that we're going to see entertaining back and forth. I'm not going to guarantee a Kansas win, but I do think that they have a very good chance here. I do want to, though, before we actually get into the official predictions, there is one other thing that we like to do here on the Rock Chalk Podcast, and that is to take a look at all of the lines from our sponsor, the Prize Picks. Prize Picks, they are the legal way to play daily fantasy. They have all kinds of different player props that you can pick, whether it's college football, NFL, NBA, NHL, college basketball, soccer. They even have like League of Legends and all kinds of really weird random stuff. Pick 2 to 6 different players or, you know, people or teams or whatever. Pick those lines either over or under. You can win up to, I believe it's 100 times of what you have or of what you bet, depending on, you know, how many you string together and everything. But it's a whole lot of fun. I've been doing it all year long. I did it last year too. They have all kinds of great stuff. Unfortunately for this game, there's enough unknown about the Jayhawks with the uncertainty of whether Jason Bean is going to be starting or if it's going to be Cole Ballard because of that head injury that, you know, they don't have any lines for any of the KU players, but they do have lines for a bunch of Kansas State players. So before we get into those really quick, though, you guys can go ahead and get involved. You can get a 100% match on your first deposit up to $100 if you use promo code CHALK12. That's CHALK12 over on the Prize Picks app or over at prizepicks.com. All right, so let's go ahead and jump into these. Again, they don't have anything for Kansas, but they do have quite a bit for Kansas State. They've got two different rushers. They had, DJ Giddens at 87.5 yards and Trayshawn Ward at 52.5 yards. Do either of those jump out to you as extremely poorly set?
No. I mean, those are about right at where their season averages are. I would, if I was going to play it, I would choose DJ Giddens and go over, and then Trayshawn on the under. So I would kind of split those up. I don't feel confident.
I'd probably flip it.
Time out. Is it rushing yards or yards from scrimmage?
Rushing. Yeah, just rushing yards.
I think DJ's going over 100 rushing in this game, and I think once, and here's the thing, when one of those guys is hot, you know, they do a good job, and it's not much of a rotation. It's really just to spell them. So if DJ gets going early, I don't think you're going to see a lot of Trayshawn. So that's what I would do. I could be wrong, though. I don't know.
Yeah, the only reason I would go towards Trayshawn as opposed to DJ Giddens here is, you know, Kansas, one, they got embarrassed by Taj Brooks last week, you know, at the very beginning of the game. But then they clamped down in the second half. Second half, they allowed 22 total rushing yards, including -1 rushing yards in the fourth quarter. So this defense has the ability to clamp down on the run if they're very physical up front and are taking good lines. Very clear, they actually talked about it afterwards about how they just weren't taking, you know, they weren't being as aggressive as they knew they could be. They weren't doing the things that they were supposed to do. And that allowed Texas Tech to kind of do whatever they wanted rushing. And, you know, so I think that if it starts to go bad, they're going to clamp down a little bit earlier. I do think that Trayshawn Ward is probably going to kind of be that change of pace back that is going to allow them to do a few more things than they normally would. And I think just the fact that his line is lower at 52.5 yards, I think makes it a little bit easier for him to go over, whereas I think Kansas is going to focus in on DJ Giddens quite a bit to make sure that he does not run all over them because they've seen what he can do against some of the other teams that have been really good this year. All right, let's jump over to wide receivers because, again, nothing for KU, but for K-State, I think there was five of them. It was ridiculous. No, four. DJ Giddens, 18.5 receiving yards.
Over.
Yeah, that one seems so easy. Like, he catches one pass and he probably has over that.
Yeah, he's either not going to catch a pass or it's going over.
Right, exactly. Phillip Brooks at 51.5 receiving yards.
I wouldn't touch it. If forced, I'm going to say under, but he's like going to be right around 50. He's going to be between 45 and 55.
Yeah.
In between.
It's a lot like some of the Kansas players like Luke Grimm or, you know, Quentin Skinner or Mason Fairchild. Like if they get two catches, they probably go over because they typically get big catches for, you know, 20 or 30 yards. If they don't catch the ball though, obviously they go under, but like, it's either they're going to blow right past it or it's going to be extremely disappointing because they don't get the ball at all.
That's the exact opposite, actually.
Oh, really?
He's either going to have 4 or 8 catches, but it doesn't matter. It's going to be 45 to 55 yards.
Interesting. So. That's great. If, you know, you could get a line at, you know, 42 yards or something like that. But, okay.
Yeah, no, doesn't help with this one.
Ben Sano, the tight end at 38.5.
Senate, sorry.
38.5 yards.
Over.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where a lot of teams are going to be.
That's the preferred target.
Oh, so. Well, and honestly, I think Kansas struggles with tight ends that can actually catch passes, you know, unless they're getting a bunch of pressure. What they've been able to do is neutralize tight ends by being aggressive enough on the pass rushing that the tight end has to stay in and block more often than not.
If that's the case, they're still going to use Ben Sennett in the slot, and then they're going to bring in Will Swanson to do that blocking. So,
okay. Again, so in other words, he'll be a tight end in name only.
Technically, actually, he's only a full. If we want to get weird, he's listed as the starting fullback, actually, not even tight end.
It's funny. Jared Casey's the same way. He's listed as a fullback / tight end on the roster. They put him as a tight end because he was very small for a fullback when he first got onto campus. So they didn't want to list him as a fullback because nobody would take it seriously. And now he is in the depth chart as a tight end, but he is definitely, has that fullback in him because of how much he loves to block. So, all right. Keegan Johnson is the last one, at 37.5 yards.
I mean, look, he's come on. Like Texas, after that interception that he caused, he had a massive second half and, he was involved last week. I'm going to say the under though. He's been a massive disappointment. You just got to kind of hope that he's healthy next year and he lives up to the hype. But I'm going to say under, but at the same time, he has the athletic ability and if he gets involved in the game early, he could go for 120, but I've seen way too many games where he put up a goose egg. So I'm going to say under.
All right. And then just the last couple ones here, total receptions. For Phillip Brooks, it's four receptions. For Ben Sennett, it's 3.5. I think over on both of those.
Yeah, if you had to, over on both of them. Again, that's that Phil Brooks-like number.
Yeah, the Phillip one is right at the right spot to make you wonder.
Yeah, so that's a good one. That's a bad number for Ben Sennett. He like was shut out of a game because he had an ankle injury early and we were blowing out. I think it was TCU, but he's going to have at least 5, I think.
All right. Well, that was our prize pick sponsored segment, picking all of those. Let's go ahead and finish up here with your prediction for the game. Obviously, there's a lot going on here. This is Sunflower Showdown. It is the final game for a lot of Kansas seniors. What are you looking at in this game? The fact that Kansas actually has a home crowd now at this point to put up some resistance to all of the K-State fans that are going to be there as well. What do you think the overall atmosphere is going to be like, and who do you have winning the game?
Yeah, on the atmosphere first. Look, I counted it up. You know, I've been to 10 Sunflower Showdowns in Lawrence. This is going to be my 11th one. You know, going as a tiny little baby Scott Wildcat in '98 and 2003, I haven't missed a Sunflower Showdown at all sans 2020 since 2007. Right? That was the Purple Pants. That was the final.
I think so.
No, yeah. Well, yes, since 2007. That one was in Manhattan. But 2008, here's a fun fact. Here's a little piece of history for you, Andy Mitz. In 2008, in 2010, you're looking at a Family Zone four-pack season ticket holder for the University of Kansas. Because back then, it was like, I think, four season tickets in the GA end zone for $350. And the face value of the K-State ticket those years were $85. So I was selling on StubHub. I was a ticket broker my senior year of high school and my freshman year of college. They sent me KU football season tickets to Haymaker Hall in Manhattan, Kansas. I was selling them on StubHub, and I was going to the K-State game with three of my friends for free for both of those.
I'm hearing is that there was a 2-year period where Scott McFarland was a KU football season ticket holder for
110%.
Man,
you're 100%.
That makes you a diehard KU football fan.
No, it doesn't. It makes me a smart businessman.
No, I know. You know.
I had a lot of definitely not beer money because I wasn't 21 any of those years. So I've seen a lot of K-State KU football in Memorial Stadium. I think there have been times where, you know, it's kind of like a joke. Oh, you know, it's a K-State home game. There were some games in there that there were more K-State fans.
Oh, yeah.
And then there have been games recently where it truly was 50-50. You know, outside of maybe the Les Miles, the first year for Les Miles, the Who Is K-State game, that was maybe 60-40 KU. It's going to be, you know, I was saying 70-30, 75-25, maybe even 80-20 KU fans. This is going to be the most hostile Kansas Memorial Stadium that K-State has experienced probably since 2008.
I was actually at that game. I rushed the field to help tear down the goalposts. So,
well, did you guys? I mean, because that was Ron Prince with the purple pants, and then he was fired the next day. Did you guys rush for that
one? I'm pretty sure we rushed because it was the first time we beat you guys in a while.
No, 2005 was the first time you guys beat us.
Oh, you know what? I think that's the one I'm thinking of then.
Yeah, because 2004. You guys beat us in 2004 and then 6-7 and 8 with Ron Prince.
Yeah, because I remember the score, the 31-28. So.
Yeah. So.
Okay, sorry.
So that was. I don't think you guys rushed because that was the year after your guys' Orange Bowl. So I don't think
you guys rushed. Yeah, we didn't rush the field then. You're right.
No.
Gosh dang it, when the K-State guy knows KU history better than you. No.
Look, house divided. My mother was baby Jayhawk. My brother got his bachelor's from K-State, his master's from KU. He's been a KU season ticket holder ever since he graduated from K-State. Have one cousin who graduated from KU, a lot of KU fans on that side of the family. So I know my – this is so us. I bet you that I could go – toe-to-toe with the average KU fan when it comes to knowing KU football history.
Oh gosh, probably
from,
yeah,
like 1990 to present.
Well, the biggest problem with that is because
the average KU fan football,
right, didn't watch KU football during most
until
of that,
recently.
So,
so again, when you talk atmosphere, look, it's going to be the most pro KU crowd at least since the Les Miles his first year. Maybe honestly, 2010, K-State had just gotten rocked by Nebraska. You guys were 2 or 3 weeks removed from putting it on Georgia Tech. So it's probably going to be the most KU crowd since 2010. Maybe even going back to, like I said, 2008. So it's going to be a fun atmosphere. I think it's going to be the second or third most hostile environment K-State's played in. Early on in that Texas Tech game, it was pretty wild. The Oklahoma State game was pretty wild. I'll tell you this right now. I was at K-State, Missouri in Columbia. There was maybe like 8,000 to 10,000 K-State fans. That might be a little much, but it was a sold-out crowd. Their first sellout in a long time. And I'll tell you what, those posers in Columbia, Missouri, they don't have atmosphere. They didn't get, there wasn't a single moment in that game where it was even loud at all, except for the final field goal. So I'll tell you this, it will 100% be louder at David Booth, Kansas Memorial Stadium than it ever was at Farrow Field in Columbia, Missouri. I can guarantee you that. So I'm looking forward to the atmosphere, quite frankly. Prediction for the game. I said 37-17 on my show. I have no idea what's going on with Jason Bean. I'm a Bean guy. I said it. I think I said it to you. I don't think the difference between Jason Bean and JD is as big as some KU fans want to think. We can save that for another time. I think Jason Bean is a very good quarterback. I mean, you have to start talking about Jason Bean as being second to only Todd Reesing, you know, in what in this millennium. I mean, seriously, he is good. He's banged up. If he's playing, look, it looked like there was a NAS. It could have, you know, obviously his leg looked a little banged up. Looks like there was some concussion type stuff. I'm serious. You know, I hope he is okay.
But the last gets report, report was that he was practicing and that they were expecting him to start. So,
yeah. So again, but he's not 100%. Obviously coming off of that, he's not going to be looking to do as much with his legs. So I was 37-17. Now, if you were telling me we were getting closer to a 100% Jason Bean, I would probably be 37-24, 37-27, somewhere in that route. I will say something weird must have happened at the books. Since we started talking, the line has gone up to 9.5 some places. So I don't know what Vegas thinks they know, but I'm sticking at 37-17. But I think it's going to be like, you know, 10-10 early, and K-State will have either a couple big plays and they'll just kind of get out and run away from it. So that's my prediction. Sure hope I'm not wrong, because I'm reminded by KU fans every time you guys go to a bowl game of a joke. It was a half joke tweet with my friend Ryan Reinhart, another KU podcast.
Oh, yeah.
But I was joking with him back and forth when he was like, oh, yeah, you know, Lance Leipold, you know, look how high he is in the coach rankings. And I was joking with him. I was like, oh, he's going to be no different. He's never going to go to a bowl game and he's never going to beat K-State. And we were having fun with that. Yeah, we were having fun with it. And then sure enough, back-to-back bowl games by KU. KU fans sure love to remind me of that. So I also said he wouldn't beat K-State. So I'm sure if it happens – my mentions are going to be awesome.
Well, don't forget that we said here on this podcast 2 years ago that, you know, the whole would Kansas win before a different governor gives out the governor's cup. And
well, we didn't really have a bet on that. I was just kind of joking with you. I think when I came on, you know, KU had that lead. I said, okay, how many is KU going to win the next 25? And you're like, oh, you know, 7 or 8. And, so, I mean, that's the one I remember. I don't remember having a conversation about the governor. I think you just kind of declared it. I think you just
no,
said, hey,
I'll go pull the audio and send it to you at some point.
Are you sure it was with me?
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right. But regardless.
Yeah, so I don't think it's going to be this one. Again, KU is going to eventually get K-State. I'm not going to sit here and say that K-State's going to win, you know, another 15 in a row. I don't think it's going to be this year, though, so 37-17 K-State is what I have it at.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to disagree with you, obviously, as a KU fan. I do have Kansas winning this game, but it's going to be a close one, I think, the entire way through. Like, Kansas State is a good enough team that they are going to make this very difficult. I honestly even think that Kansas will probably be trailing at some point in the fourth quarter. But just the way that this team – you know, all of this is, of course, assuming that Jason Bean is playing. If it's Cole Ballard, all bets are off, because as well as he played in the second half against Texas Tech, you know, he is a true freshman walk-on who has the reins for this team. So, but assuming that Jason Bean's playing and he's at least, you know, 75%, I do think that they have the ability with all the different weapons that they have to even confuse a Kansas State defense that is very solid. It's just a matter, honestly, of how well can the Kansas defense stop the run game of the Wildcats. And, you know, they've done it against some really good teams. They, you know, they slowed down Oklahoma for quite a while. They slowed down a ton of other teams as well. And the fact that they were able to come back and stop Texas Tech the way that they did, I think shows enough that this team hasn't given up and that they're ready for this type of win. Plus, you know, there's a lot of players that have been here a really long time that this is their last chance to beat Kansas State. They've been here often enough, and they know how important this one is. I do think that they've got enough guys that have that extra juice that they'll be able to go ahead and pull this one off. I'm going to go with something like we're going to go 28-24 KU in this one. So I will be very interested to see who actually, you know, wins this game. I'm sure that we will catch up at some point, especially during basketball season, and one of us can razz the other for the, you know, the horrible football take that we had at the end of the year. So we'll get all that figured out. But Scott, for those that want to get more information about Kansas State, follow what you do. Where's the best place to do that?
Yeah, at Bosco's Boys on Twitter/X, whatever you want to call it. You can find it wherever podcasts are. We've been going 5 days a week starting back in August. We're going to see that through November, including on Thanksgiving. We'll get into December. I don't know if we're going to see it all the way through the new year like we did last year, especially since, you know, the Big 12, you know, partnering with WWE the day before they completely change everything. To decide who's going to compete for a title, you know, no, there's no conspiracies. I'm putting out a ton of episodes. So if you want to listen, please do, at Scott Wildcat on Twitter. If you want to go back and forth, please do. That's it. Always appreciate awesome. Coming
on. Well, yes, I appreciate having you on here. And as much as we like to give each other crap, you know, it's you got to have someone to kind of keep you in line every once in a while. So really appreciate you coming on here. But that is going to do it for us today. Thank you, Scott, so much for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you have not already, please go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any of the other million apps that are out there. Just search for Rock Chalk Podcast. You can subscribe. Get every episode as soon as it comes out. Give us a rating and a review. 5 stars, nice comments. It'd be absolutely fantastic. But if for whatever reason you can't do that, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring the podcast to you guys, get you all the information you need in as entertaining a way as possible. So if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, people want to try to interview, anything like that, you can contact me by email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. We are, of course, part of the 1012 Podcast Network, covering all the teams in the Big 12 Conference, partnering with Sports Social, the biggest podcast network over in Europe. You can find links to all the great shows we have by going to 1012network.com. And, of course, support us over on the Patreon. We have a lot of great stuff going up there. I had a, Big 12 basketball teams as dogs, thanks to, Kelvin Sampson talking at Big 12 Media Days. So make sure you go check that out. But visit our sponsors, Prize Picks and Charlie Hustle. And that's going to do it for us today. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Awesome.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.